So we're talking to Michael Robinson Cohen about a fascinating studio with a world-famous architect and that he was involved with at Yale, trying to find a way to sandwich in, shoehorn in, or whatever the right word would be, 100,000 units of affordable housing into a city like San Francisco. Michael, what was your own design? What did you have going on? Give us a sense of that.
So my project was called Palatina, and what it was looking at was proposing a median-scale building for San Francisco, something in the current urban form of the city. There's the large-scale residential towers in the downtown, and then there's the small-scale Victorian homes on the hills. And I felt that the city, in terms of development, can handle a median-scale building between these two current scales of architecture. And the project, what I focused on in the project is the way in which the architecture of the building defines a strict hierarchy and order of residential and home living. And by kind of shifting the organization of the plan of the building, you can start to form new potentials between residential cooperation and the way in which kind of the traditional hierarchies of the home start to be rethought and altered or radically changed.
Wow, that's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you contemplated that people might end up owning some of these units, right?
Right. Well, another focus of the median scale building is that it allows for a community to form. It's not so large where people feel anonymous in the building, and it's not so small where one person can control, have ownership over the whole building. But by forming a median scale building, it allows people to form co-ops and to have a sense of community within this building.
Tell me more about your professor, the architect Garelli. He's from Italia. He's from Italy, yes?
Yeah, he is from Italy, and he currently teaches at the Architectural Association in London and also at the Yale School of Architecture, where I took a studio. And he's been conducting a series of studios that look at the condition of housing in cities around the world.
Now, has he been an architect who's involved in building or largely in teaching?
So he is an practicing architect who has a firm that's functioning and producing projects. And he has been, something that he's looking at is the way in which the profession of architecture in the past is very much focused on like a single genius or a single individual architect, but something he's looking at in order to really foster the ideas that we've been talking about community and fellowship between people. He's looking at ways in which collaboration can produce projects and produce new buildings. So he has been doing a lot of research both academically and in his firm, but he's also worked with other architects on producing buildings and, looking at housing.
So this co-living concept that you've mentioned, is there a movement starting to build around co-living?
Yeah, there's a lot of models that are currently popping up. There's startups in San Francisco and New York and most cities around the world where people are mostly moving into existing buildings, so houses or brownstones, and setting up a co-living model where people share the amenities and share space, but also live together. Yeah, they live together. But they're also changing the financial ownership model of housing where you can rent from month to month and also potentially live within the network of housing in the different cities around the world.
You know, in New York City, we were involved, Acorn was involved for many years. One of our family of organizations was called MANA, the Mutual Housing Association of New York. And They now manage and operate some 2,000 or so units in New York City. Now, there, mutual housing, the ground was held in common, hallways in common. You know, you basically had common space, and there were owners who owned their individual unit, but so it wasn't co-living in the sense that there was only one kitchen, but there was definitely one basement, and people had their space, but they were equally involved in paying for the boiler or, as I say, for any common areas. Now, the rap against these things is always the crisis of the common. I mean, you couldn't sell your co-op for more than what you had in it. It wasn't a way to get rich, and that's why it's mutual housing. But when I first was reading some of this stuff about co-living, it looked like that was just a matter of adding a couple of pieces to the old mutual housing kind of model. Maybe I'm wrong, but, if once you're paying for some common things, you could have, a common kitchen. You still worry about who's going to wash the dishes. It's the problem of all communes, I guess.
Right.
But, and that's why, I've wondered if, small kitchens along a house trailer or an Airstream or even a sailboat or a houseboat model wouldn't decrease some of the strain of common kitchen problems, where you might have huge refrigerators in common, but not all cooking facilities for small projects. But I don't know what you're thinking about all of that.
Yeah, I think that you're talking about trailers and boats and looking at models outside of the traditional architecture profession is really interesting and really fruitful. But I think what you're saying, it really points to how architects can have a strong impact on this type of living, because architects can really think about the form and composition of housing. And by simply just changing the scale between a kitchen and a bedroom or a hallway and a bathroom, you really start to redefine how a house works, how the traditional house works. And also the hierarchy and relationships between gender that are associated with the traditional model of housing. So by simply within the form of a building are the politics of the building. So by redefining that form, you open up new types of association between people.
Well, that's certainly right. But and it also has to do with age. I mean, it's New Orleans, a city both of us know a little bit about, because so many of the houses were built 100 years ago or more, many of them were built without indoor bathrooms originally. So the notion, of a spacious, large bathroom or closets, not in a shotgun double, not in 750 square feet. I mean, the bathroom used to be an outhouse in the back of that lot, and what's interesting to me from many years of residency in New Orleans off and on is I wouldn't know what to do with a big bathroom. I mean, almost all the bathrooms I've ever had are almost as small as what you find in a Airstream trailer. So they're like closets with running water, but definitely if you've come from the suburban experience where you're used to, 300 square feet in a bathroom, that would be a little shocking, I guess, for you to, not have a full-length tub or, some other things. But we're going to have to make some changes, aren't we, Michael?
Yeah, and I'm excited about looking towards the future and really pursuing these ideas.
You add another, 100 million people in the U.S., many of them coming into our major cities. Less is probably going to have to become enough, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And is that where a lot of architects of your generation are looking, is how to accommodate this kind of future, or were y'all really the sort of odd men and women out at Yale, our School of Architecture?
I think there's a shift happening in the architecture profession right now, and this is a need that is very apparent, the unaffordability of cities is being talked about constantly, and it's something that all of my colleagues are facing right now as they graduate from school and head into cities to work. Finding a place to live is extremely difficult, so it's something that's very personal. And so I think that people are really excited about moving forward with this and thinking about this, because it's going to have a huge effect on a lot of people.
There's no question. It's just we do need a lot of education on this less is enough. I mean, remember what happened to that high-flying architect that used to promote those Katrina cottages that were, he argued, what was his name from Miami? You know what I'm talking about.
Andre Sweeney, I think.
Yeah, exactly. He just thought those were going to replace trailers and sold them to Mississippi and tried to sell them to New Orleans, but people clearly weren't ready to look at these as permanent housing structures. So we've got work to do, and Michael, you and I have talked about maybe getting Professor Arelli on one of these shows so we can talk more about this.
Yeah, that would be exciting.
Now, if anybody has any good ideas, should they get in touch with you before you build the next one? I've got an acre of property in Baton Rouge behind our Union Hall there that's ready for any kind of experiment on housing. So keep that in mind when you're ready. But where do you see these projects cropping up first?
Well, I think that's part of the next stage in our research. It's about looking at places that this could work, but I think it's really relevant to almost every city today around the world. And so, and moving forward and turning this into a real project, it's about figuring out the constructability and then also figuring out the financial model and refining the design of the project.
Well, if it's going to be affordable, we're going to have a line. Today on Wade's World, we've been talking to Michael Robinson Cohen, recently graduated from Yale School of Architecture, and somebody who we're going to hear from in the future. Next week, we're going to have our own Willie Cosme telling us a little bit about Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico's in the news because they've got a little problem on money. Some people believe the island may go bankrupt, but they're also in the middle of a drought and a number of other things. What's the impact on Puerto Rico going to be as Cuba opens up in terms of the tourism that drives its economies? This has been Wade's World, Friday next week, 9 to 9:30 Central Time, KABF 88.3, 100,000 watts of people power, live streamed at www.kabf.org. Look for the podcast on this show and future shows on our website by Monday. Thank you. This is Wade Rathke at Wade's World.